Hey, everybody. Welcome to the episode 13. It's our return to Red Chair Dialogue, right?
That was smooth. I like that.
Is this it?
I thought it was going to be Red Chair Now.
Red Chair Dialogue.
This is the new
episode 13.
Yes.
New. It's a reboot.
No, we've done it since New 52. Oh. That's when the podcast
started. Well, we'll be the uncanny avenging Red Chair.
You know what, the people listening are going, who's that voice?
Exactly.
It's familiar in a weird way.
It's
but he finally got out of jail.
It's a clown.
And we're very glad that Ryan has rejoined us.
I'm back.
And then Red Chair.
Adam and I are here. Now, why are you hogging the microphone?
Because I do that from time to time.
You don't do that. It's in between all of us.
Because the
show.
We're balanced. Because the microphone knows what it wants to hear.
Okay, so we've hit a lull here on a Saturday, which is good. It's been crazy busy.
Right.
Poor Ryan's been here for about 3 hours waiting to do this.
I know, I've just been languishing in dread.
You should have cracked open your Ecstatics Omnibus.
Actually.
That's like, what, 75% off?
It is, this great deal here at Pittsburgh Comics.
Two left.
Yeah, Colin was gracious enough to order in these Ecstatic Marvel Omnibi. This is like 2,000 pages of comics. I like how gingerly I'm trying to get this out of the bag because if I drop it on myself, I might die.
And that was
this
episode,
like,
is in memory of Ryan after he crushed himself underneath.
But yeah, it's the entire Milligan Allred Ecstatics X-Force run, which was awesome.
Right, and you got such a good deal on these that you passed it along to me
for only $45, $125 hardcover for $45.
Yeah,
and I did have to. There you go. See, there's that crappy fill-in artist, that Darwin Cook guy.
That hack. I love him.
Yeah. So, but we, lots of stuff to talk about. We didn't do a podcast this week because, nobody showed up. But,
sorry about that.
Lots of stuff happened that I personally want to talk about.
Yeah.
So I figured I'll start with me because I might get pulled away at any minute.
No.
I guess we can start with Marvel. Why not? Mm-hmm. Their big reveal this week was that Angela from the Spawn comics is coming to the Marvel Universe.
How does that happen?
Is going to be the big secret surprise at the end of Age of Ultron 10, which is great because we have two issues out so far. So let's already give away the end. I think that's great. But yeah, my big thing, like I said on the Facebook page, was kind of like, I think, sadly, this isn't going to have the reaction people are expecting. I think it's going to be far more of, who's this character?
Right.
She hasn't been in print since 1995. It's from Spawn. And then people are going to go, what's Spawn? Or, I remember my uncle being excited about Spawn. Do they still make that? When I heard it, big reveal, and then I heard it, I'm like, okay, they're making a big thing about Gaiman writing. It's like, okay, I don't really see him writing it. And I'd much rather have him write something far better than Angela. Even though he created the character, but still.
Yeah.
It's a Spawn thing. So I, he created it, but it was in Spawn.
That was the legal battle, was that Todd McFarlane asserted that he owned Angela and Medieval Spawn, or was Medieval Spawn Alan Moore?
I don't remember.
I think Alan Moore created Cagliostro for Spawn. But in any case, at the very least, Neil Gaiman and Todd McFarlane had a legal battle over who owned the character of Angela, because Gaiman insisted that when McFarlane invited him to write that issue of Spawn, it was under the condition that anything that Gaiman created would be owned by Neil Gaiman. So they had this big legal battle over who owned Angela. Is it Todd McFarlane? And that tied into the Miracle Man legal battle, which was also recently resolved, I think, last year or the year before.
Where
Marvel owns Miracle Man. So, that's the thing. We don't know. Do they just own the ability to reprint the old Miracle Man
stuff? I don't think it's all ever been answered because happened is that company, as it was going into bankruptcy, sold the rights to Miracle Man to three different people.
Yes.
And that's where the confusion has arisen. So I think Marvel bought them with the expectation that they'd be able to finish Gaiman's story and all this. And maybe, in my opinion, they should just go ahead and do it and then fight it out later.
Mm-hmm.
But same thing, like Rom was in the one thing in Age of Ultron.
Yes.
And I'm like, just reprint it. What's the worst that could happen is somebody comes to make a claim on, you know, especially like a, you know, an essential ROM.
Right.
You know, okay, yes, you want 25% of the profits of this book. Okay, here you go. Here's your $8 check. You know, it's not going to have a lot of profits, but it'd be nice to be in print. But just do it, you know. But.
And it's interesting because, you know, they said, oh, this is going to be the big thing. And then they asked, you know, oh, so this is the ending of Age of Ultron. And I guess Quesada said something to the effect of, well, this is like those little teaser scenes at the end of the Marvel Studios movies where this isn't really like all the ending is, but she's going to be there.
And she's going to be in all the books.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, something. And she's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy or something. Because I'm like, wait, isn't she like an angel, hence the name Angela?
Right.
And I'm like, so yeah, you'll put an angel into outer space. What?
And that was...
That makes sense. That's high up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you like, associate angels and demons with Earth, not with...
Right, it made the Punisher an
space.
Angel.
I mean...
Yeah.
Well, it's like when I was in on Wednesday, I was saying to Colin, like... I mean, Marvel has...
Hey, you, give me my books. Yeah, oh, sorry. Geez. Besides that. Okay.
Besides that, I also... You know, Marvel has a heaven and hell. They've got Mephisto. I was actually just rereading old... well, relatively old Mark Waid Fantastic Four, where they went to heaven to try and get Ben Grimm's soul back. Yeah,
where they met Jack Kirby.
Yeah, yes, he was God,
and Jack Kirby erased his deformity, Mr. Fantastic's deformity, with his magic pencil eraser. but anyway, Marvel has a heaven.
He drew him, so.
But how connected is their heaven and hell with the main universe? Not terribly, I would say. So. Really, I'm wondering what her connection is going to be to the universe at all. How are they going to explain that she's here? Is this going to lead to more Miracle Man stuff? Is Gaiman finally going to get to finish his Miracle Man? Who knows?
But at this point, who cares? You know, it's been out of print so long, and they haven't even reprinted that. They reprinted the old 50s stuff that sold for, what's the word I'm looking for? Crap?
Yeah.
You know, I think I sold one copy of the first issue, and the person went, that's enough of that.
Didn't they do, like, a hardcover that was black and white?
Yeah, I've ordered those in at severe discounts like that.
Yeah.
I have one copy of each, just if you want
it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll think about that.
So, yeah, I just didn't see that as the big, ooh, I saw it more of a...
What?
Really?
Yeah. Well, that was, you know, what I tweeted.
Yeah,
to you,
WTF. Is, that's the real WTF moment.
Yeah, this is a better WTF moment than DC's covers, and I don't really think that's a great thing. I mean, Angela coming to the Marvel Universe could prove to be an interesting idea. It might lead to, like, an Image crossover or something. Who knows?
It's not really that
right,
big.
Right, but the only way to have a crossover would have to cross over with Spawn with Todd McFarlane. So, what are the chances of that's going to happen?
Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
Todd McFarlane's a whack job.
He is, yes.
He was on Talking Dead.
That's where I learned that he's a whack job.
Yeah.
I didn't really pay attention to a lot that he said.
No, I didn't finish watching that when I gave up.
Yeah. So, how is Age of Ultron doing?
It's a thing.
It's a book.
Yeah.
Did number 3 come out?
No,
next week's number 3. I've already read 4, so wait till you guys see what's in store for you.
A lot of stuff.
Pages. Pages and pages of smashed buildings.
Mm. Well, the first issue that I read, I just kept asking myself, when did Ultimate Hawkeye get to the 616?
I think that's the consequence they have of getting Brian Hitch to draw.
Well, it's not so much that, but there's a lot of confusion, and then it's clearly Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And even though they're steadfastly saying it's Doc Ock, it's clearly not.
Yeah.
Well, it was obviously wrote for
Wrote?
Written.
Thank you.
It was obviously written for the, for before ABX. Righted. And before Marvel Now.
Right. Well, and we know what it was. We know it was done 2 years ago.
That's why I think it's so confusing, because it wasn't made... For what we're dealing with,
and a lot of people are out there saying, "Well, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, continuity, you know." But it's that was especially reading the that Marvel Untold storybook. It focuses so much on continuity and how important that is, and that's what makes them different from DC, where DC's continuity got totally wacko. That Marvel had, if something happened in Spider-Man and he was in Marvel Team Up, that affected that.
It was there,
but now it just seems. So, you know, when is this happening? When is Age of Ultron happening? Is it in the future? Is it in the past? It's just, we don't know. And a lot of people, you keep getting there. Well, just keep reading. Well, okay, but, you know, for me, it's just keep selling.
Yeah.
So that's, it's a tough sell.
And I guess the thing I wonder,
people say, is it good? I'm like, it is.
It's something.
You know, I wonder is, you know, when they finally said that they were going to publish this thing, you know, they said that Brian Hitch is drawing 1 through 5, But then I think Carlos Pacheco and a couple other people are working on 6 through 10, which is fine. I have no problem with other artists. I like Carlos Pacheco's art, but it makes me feel like maybe they extended the story.
Oh, they did. They extended it to 5 issues. My other concern with it is when it was that late, they should have just said, hey, here's a neat story we did.
Yeah.
And here you go.
Yeah.
Instead, next week we have Superior Spider-Man 6, Age of Ultron, and Fantastic Four 5, Age of Ultron.
Right. We're getting
all that aren't going to tie into the regular series at all.
Which were obviously thought up later.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those, why not just, hey, here's something neat. It's all on its own.
Yeah.
Flashpoint. Here it is. Doesn't have anything to do with anything else. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, yeah, it's been late. It was going to fit in. It's not now.
Yeah.
Just read it and enjoy. But it seems like they're trying to say, you know, especially I was looking at the last, in the current previews, it's something, someone's decision will shake the Marvel Universe for its core for years to follow. Okay, and then I read another book and it said basically the exact same thing. I'm like, wow, two events. It's almost like, I don't, you're not reading Avengers or New Avengers.
I've read a couple of them.
Okay, so you have,
up a little bit.
They both have these big world-threatening moments going on, written by the same guy.
I keep thinking if they're almost the same.
How much threat can the world handle, you know?
Well, which makes me keep thinking, they seem very, like, similar threats as well.
Yeah, that could be.
And I kept thinking, well, maybe Hickman's doing, like, one big thing, and he's going to combine these books. But I don't see that, because, as you said before, the continuity, the timeline is so screwed up.
Yeah.
I don't see it ever. I don't think it's together. I really don't.
And I think what makes this even more awkward, too, is that we've already had the big grand finale anniversary issue of Bendis's Avengers plural runs, you know? So, given that this was supposed to be a part of that run, but they've already sort of done all the fanfare for his run is done, this kind of seems left over. You know, they kind of, and it really is, you know, they pulled this out of the drawer and said, we're going to keep publishing this, which, like you were saying, when does this take place? This inclines me to think that either nothing huge is going to happen, or in the new part that they commissioned, that's where something's going to happen, or still nothing big is going to happen and everything's going to go back to normal. It's just going to sort of add to his run that's done already. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Plus, I quit. I wish these rumors wouldn't keep coming up of, you know, everything. Yeah. Like, that they're rebooting everything, and it's just like, I don't see that happening. I really don't.
So, yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Hey, we're at issue 12. Time for a new number one.
Yep.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me, but actually pulling a new 52, I don't think their Marvel would do that.
I don't know.
Unless they're desperate.
Kind of sidetracky, but related to what you're saying about rumors, I'm finding lately that I feel like we don't have a lot of journalism in comics journalism. And I'm not trying to not... there are a lot of
the
people
The only
out there.
Person actually doing any journalism is Rich Johnson on Bleeding Cool, where he's actually going out and finding stuff, where the other one is just, they send him a press release and they print it.
Right.
Or they do a softball interview.
Right.
Which, I mean, granted, it's not like, you know, foreign affairs or anything where we need hard-hitting stuff, but...
I guess the thing that reminded me of it over the weekend, or just over the past week, was this whole Josh Fialkov walking off of Green Lanterns because...
I was getting there.
Sorry.
That's okay.
What?
But it just seems like...
This podcast is over.
You know, first we had the story... Okay, Andy Diggle said that he is leaving Action because of professional reasons. Fine. Then Josh Fialkov says, I'm leaving Red Lanterns and Green Lantern Corps before my issues are even out because of professional reasons. I don't want to do where they want me to go, so I'm going to leave. But I don't think he actually said himself that they wanted him to kill Jon Stewart. And I don't know where that story came from. It's I remember reading Rich Johnson saying, like, well, sources tell me. And, you know, I understand in journalism you have a lot of closed sources sometimes.
Right. And then DC's saying, we never said that.
Right. So it's all boiling down to he said, she said. There's no real concrete information. And
he's not going to say anything because he still wants the opportunity to work. You know, you don't burn any bridges.
It's sort of his business, and I can understand that.
My bigger problem, not so much taking a different approach, not the journalism aspect, but the DC aspect, is what the heck's going on? Because you have Grant Morrison leaving, so we got to figure out how much of a decline is there going to be on Action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, okay, well, Andy Diggle, okay, he's got some credibility.
Yeah.
He's done stuff, but I don't know if he has a fan base, per se.
Right.
But at least it's a name, okay.
Yeah.
So he's going to take over Action. Okay, so there's going to be a little drop. And now, oh, he left already. Okay, Tony Daniels doing it. Okay, so now do I order Action at my Savage Hawkman level?
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's like what I was thinking. When I saw that Tony Daniels was going to be on it, I said, well, this is just Detective all over again.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
said,
it sold well because it was Detective, but it didn't sell well.
For Detective.
It wasn't a good...
For what it was.
Right.
Sure.
So that scares me. And then you have Green Lantern. Okay, all these creative teams are wrapping up, and here's the new creative teams. Oh, well, we already lost one writer who's doing two books.
Right. Yeah.
So of the four books, now we have to find a new... Oh, well, these other writers will just fill in. I'm like, okay, so we're already going to see, you know, from my perspective, how much of a drop is there going to be?
Yeah.
Now, you know, do I even bother ordering these anymore? Because it's going to be such a drop, because it's clear they don't know
what
they're doing.
You know what's interesting about Green Lantern, though? I keep asking myself, what are they doing with books like, I don't know, maybe New Grey. I mean, your two main books that they can do something with after Geoff Johns would be Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps.
Mm-hmm.
New Guardians, I don't know. They might be able to do something with it. But Red Lanterns, like, depending on what they're doing with post, you know, Geoff Johns.
And you want to say, okay, you know, this guy has a clear vision for this book. Well, the guy who did that just quit.
Yeah.
So now they're scrambling to get something together to get it out on time.
And his idea sounded really cool. I don't know if you heard any interviews, but basically Fialkov said that he saw Green Lantern Corps and Red Lanterns being linked as far as theme, because a Green Lantern Corps book is supposed to focus on, you know, all the other members of the Corps, and their duty is to protect people in the universe. But that's kind of Atrocitus's deal. They just go about it a different way. They think, whereas the Green Lantern Corps says, this person is doing something wrong, they need to be tried and locked up. Atrocitus says, this person is doing something wrong, they need to be killed immediately.
Yeah.
So he said that you didn't have to read both books, but you were going to sort of get a bigger story of what does it mean to police the universe? What does it mean to get justice? What does it mean to get vengeance? Things like that. And I was kind of really interested in that, but apparently that's not going to happen now.
Maybe the other guy will do it.
But it's not.
You know, it's just, you know, talk about tripping and stumbling every opportunity they have. And another thing I posted online that you commented on was the WTF, that they're releasing all the covers. And I'm like, not only are they releasing them early, which I think is dumb, because I thought the whole point was come into the store, flip it open.
Surprised,
But they're releasing it. Our final orders were due on Monday, and on Wednesday they're releasing the covers of those issues. So it's like, why are you, you know, granted, you get my numbers in, and if it's a really bad cover, okay, I'm screwed, I ordered too many. But people aren't going to remember 3 weeks from now, oh, that was really cool, I want to buy that.
Yeah.
You know, release it Tuesday for Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Don't release it 3 weeks ahead of time. Yeah. It just takes away. I mean, a lot of them I've liked.
Yeah, I've.
But
I haven't found them quite.
What's the point of doing this?
Yeah, I haven't found a lot of them quite as WTF as they said it was going to be.
Right.
But I still.
I'm glad they got rid of that.
Yeah, I was really glad that.
I think that was the Comics Pro meeting was no.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Because they're on the panel and we're like, what else could it stand for?
Why the face?
Yeah, sure. Sure, that's going to work.
What the 52?
That's what another store said. What the 52? But it's just they just I mean, I love DC, but they just seem rudderless right now. They don't know it's editorial even after that big North Carolina thing.
Yeah.
Still seems no, we're doing this story.
Right.
Well, when, you know, and as one of the creators said, don't you hired writers to write, let them write their stories. Yeah. And they still don't seem to get it. And I mean, we have a Superman movie coming out, and one Superman book is totally rudderless.
Yeah.
One isn't selling at all. And then we have a new one from Scott Snyder, which is great. But again, I don't have it. I don't know. Is it going to be good? You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I feel like, you know, we're 2 years into this new DC universe now, and you know, you mentioned the North Carolina meeting that they did when, you know, all this talk was going on online about creators saying, don't go work for DC. Yeah. I was there and it was terrible. And after the big North Carolina conference or whatever that they had as a company, I remember Dan DiDio said, like, publicly online, you know, I apologize to any writer that's worked with us or is still working with us. I'm paraphrasing, of course. You know, that they were going to try and make sure that it wasn't necessarily editorial telling people what they had to write. But it doesn't seem like
you know, Andy Diggle hasn't said why he's leaving, right.
But Fialkov
said it. Well, he thanked his editor, but obviously there was, you know, you don't walk off two books.
Yeah. You don't walk off two books, and you also don't walk off two books whistling a happy tune, I wouldn't think.
He was. By what he said about it after leaving. Yeah.
It just seems like from everything that we've seen happen since the reboot, where the big focus of trying to make it into a universe right at the reboot was they were trying to bring in the Daemonites from Wildstorm. Mm-hmm. And then that got shoved under the rug. And then we started getting into this Trinity War stuff, which...
still hasn't happened.
Right. And according to Rich Johnson, they've got, like, four versions of it tumbling around in the air somewhere.
Well, it's started.
Right. It's...
just the last issue of Justice League mentioned. Or at the end, it says, now on the road, the Trinity War.
Okay. So...
but yeah, no, it's...
but yeah, it just seems like... I guess I think of, like, Marvel now, where... like you were saying about the history of Marvel Comics book, that Sean Howe book about...
ooh, look at you being all fancy.
I know, the author and everything. I still need to read that. I haven't gotten that yet. You know, saying that, you know, the continuity is really important with Marvel. And then I look at a publisher like Valiant, who just came back in the past couple of years, and granted, they're only working with four books or six or whatever they're up to now versus 52, but that universe feels very... together mm-hmm. and cohesive, whereas DC, even though they said, well, you know, we're going to draw on the classic traits of all these characters that everybody loves, that everyone can relate to, it seems like everything they've done so far has been often left field, not connected to itself, and I'm wondering if that's going to come together at all. I mean, because I think back to some of the books that came out after Crisis on Infinite Earths. I wasn't reading comics at that time. But I've gone back and
read a lot. Were you born?
Like, maybe... 85? I was born 2 years after.
I was so,
but, I mean, like, I've gone back and I've read, you know, like...
Child.
I know. But, I've read the John Byrne Superman. I've read the Giffen and DeMatteis Justice League. Some of the Batman that came out around that time. I think that's near when Alan Grant started writing.
Okay.
The guy from Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Dr. Alan Grant came and wrote
paleontology.
There was a whole story arc about velociraptors in Batman.
Okay, I'm ready.
Anyway,
where's that?
That kind of stuff seemed very cohesive because it was a new universe. You know, the Justice League hadn't really formed yet. Whereas I think this 5-year time jump really hurt them because they didn't know where it was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, it appears that there wasn't really a plan. And I get that the idea was don't worry about it, just have fun with the stories. Mm-hmm. But the stories started relying on that.
Well, and, don't worry about it, just have fun with the stories. Oh, by the way, we want you to write the story this way.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? 2 weeks later, no, write it this way.
Right.
And that's what the writers seem to be complaining the most about.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, and you think, okay, they got their act together, and then stuff like this happens. You just go, you know, here's a bunch of books that...
right.
I don't know if we're even going to sell, and I have to try to figure out how to order them.
Right.
And I'm expecting the worst, you know.
And it's different for me and Adam.
Hello.
What's different for me and Adam?
Well, because, you know, we're looking to read the articles. I like Superman. I like Batman. I want to see what they're doing every week. But it's different for Colin because, you know, you've got to figure out how to sell this stuff.
Right. And you know.
And
the only good thing, like something like with the action,
mm-hmm.
even the Diggle issue will be returnable,
mm-hmm.
or it might not be. But there's because Diggle was supposed to have written 18 that just shipped, but because more so when they do creative changes like that, they do make them returnable, mm-hmm. which is nice. But it's still it's not quite as simple as it sounds. You got to keep track.
And I guess Tony Daniels has an idea. Being the artist on it, right?
Right, he's going to... He's going to write the script based off of Diggle's plot.
But that's still difficult, because
three-issue arc Daniel was on for.
Yeah, he said that he has another big project for DC that he's been working on.
So he'll be off of it pretty soon.
Right, so it's just one of those, here's your big book.
Yeah.
And now it's like, anybody want to work on this?
Yeah.
You know, here you go, Timmy. You know,
What's really interesting, if what he's saying is true, it is only a 3-issue arc, I would think that means that they have to have a new writer and artist announced by previews next month. Because aren't the previews next month going to be for July?
Well, April, May, June.
So,
this month. But it's like the previews that ships next week is going to have all the Green Lantern 20s in it.
Right.
That are half of which.
But that's for June, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So next month. The next month's previews is going to have Action Comics 21. Who's in that? Like, who's writing and drawing action? They're going to have to figure that out fast.
It'll just be Dan. Yeah, I don't
know. Right, I don't know.
Everybody's favorite. TBA.
Yeah.
I've never seen... Have we ever seen DC do a TBA listing?
Not that I remember.
I don't remember either.
Marvel just had one in this book. For Age of Ultron 1 or Ultron Son of Ultron or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah. Never seen
writer TBA.
Yeah.
Like, never seen TBA.
And, no. And his cousin TBD.
TBD.
I'm going to have him in for signing.
Excellent. Yes.
I'll bring in my black poster that just says classified.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, hey.
I'll bring in Captain America White.
Yeah.
There you go.
Issue zero.
And,
what's that?
Jeez.
Sorry.
That's not a tumor. That's a phone ring.
The
continue listening.
The guy who wrote the backups for Grant Morrison's Action Comics. We can segue into Morrison's Action after this, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
yes.
This writer that's been writing the backups in Morrison's Action Comics, his name is Sholly Fish, and he was writing the comic book version of Batman Brave and the Bold. He also wrote, I want to say he was writing some of like the kids' line comic books for DC, like the Scooby-Doos and things like that.
Okay.
His backups in Morrison's Action Comics have been amazing. Little 8-page stories.
The most recent one, what was that? Oh, it was that one that takes place in the Fifth Dimension.
Well, yeah, that one was excellent. Yeah. There was that. He also did, towards the beginning of the run, like that first Morrison Action hardcover you got,
yeah,
the backups he did were mostly about Steel. And so,
So
while Superman is fighting Brainiac and Metallo on the bridge, you can see Steel fighting in the background, but then the backup story was focusing on Steel's perspective of the same fight.
Yeah.
And he made Steel, John Henry Irons, a really cool character, and then he wrote the Action Comics Annual, which was really great, which had Steel in it. And you were talking about the Fifth Dimension story about Miksha Spitlick and Princess Gespitlet, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I think.
Yeah, I give up. I don't even know who the bad guy's name was, to tell you the truth.
Vindictivix.
Yeah.
But, give him Action Comics. Even if it's just a little one-and-done story.
Might as well. Why put him on the backstories if you're not going to do anything with him later? I mean, he's been writing it. They've been good. Go with it.
And, you know, his first couple of stories were illustrated by, I think Brad Walker did the Steel stories. And then I don't think it was Criss Cross. I don't remember the name. Someone else drew the, there were a couple stories in between where they talked about, like, how Superman got all of his shirts with the S screen printed on them and things like that. But then the last couple of backup stories have been with, why am I blanking? I wanted to say Peter Krause, but I don't think it's Peter Krause.
It seems like so long when I've read those ones.
Anyway, the art was fantastic and they should just give the book to them. Or even the annual was drawn by Cully Hamner and written by Sholly Fish. And that was amazing.
Sometimes the backups are written even by the writer of the main book.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, in that case it wasn't, though. You're right.
Yeah, and you know what? That Morrison handpicked that guy. Like, they made a big deal about saying that when they announced that Action was getting a backup, to say that Grant Morrison said, I want that guy to write the backups in my Superman comic book. And they're really good backups.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, we want to move into Action.
Yeah, let's...
Do we just want to talk about the whole run? Do we want to talk about Just 18?
Now, let's talk about, let's try to sum up, basically, let's see.
All right, well, so
well, 8, you know,
18 was the big finale
there
issue.
There
you go. Okay, so you're just going to hand me the first volume?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so Once Upon a Time, Superman and Action Comics by Grant Morrison. No, I'm not going to story time the whole book, but that would be weird, because then I'd have to describe it and you can't read it.
Well, at first anyway. He wore a t-shirt and jeans. And that raised a few eyebrows when it first came out.
So, okay, well, 18 was the big finale. You know, the big showdown with Vindictivix from the Fifth Dimension and the Superman Revenge Squad.
Yep.
Or I guess they called them the Anti-Superman Army in this version.
Yeah.
And,
which are all forms of kryptonite, right?
Not all of them.
One was blue kryptonite.
Blue kryptonite.
Green.
There was blue, green, and red.
And red.
And which was
the other guy was, what's his name, from Krypton?
Zadu.
Zadu, yeah.
Yeah, the Kryptonian, the Phantom Zone criminal.
Yeah.
Man, where to even start with this? The little thing I did notice that Morrison changed the way red kryptonite worked in issue 18, in that traditionally...
Let's do 52, anything, guess.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I mean, like, traditionally...
Not even red kryptonite is
safe. No, it's not. Traditionally, like, in the older continuities...
Have a Tim Drake.
Well, even before the New 52, red kryptonite altered... It caused random mutations. So the classic image is always, like, a Kryptonian or Superman with the head of a lion or the head of an ant instead. It just causes weird mutations.
Yeah.
So he changed it so that the woman who uses red kryptonite as her weapon, she said that it causes, like, intense hallucinations.
Yeah.
But she warned everyone else not to get too close.
Yeah.
Because if they're too close to Superman when it's affecting him...
They'll experience it as well.
Right, exactly, which that's different and not... integral to the story, but
what did red kryptonite do before?
That's it caused mutations. Not
it caused mutations, yeah. Not human.
Yeah. So okay. In this issue, he just hallucinated that.
I really didn't remember what red kryptonite did. I know blue.
I want to.
Blue weakens. Does it weaken or make him?
Wow. Well, I'm just gonna go ask the internet real quick since I have the convenience of.
We all know
technology.
Green is poisonous.
Yeah, like, green is poisonous. I know gold would. Take away superpowers.
I knew this. Like I knew this. It's on like the tip of my tongue. What blue kryptonite?
I know. Oh, jeez. I'm gonna have to send back my decoder ring. I'm not gonna be allowed to be in the club anymore.
You're out of the. You're out of the Justice League.
All right. Well, while I look this up, so this is the showdown with Super Doom and Vindictivix.
Well, Vindictivix.
Yeah.
Wow. I got that one right. Yay. Basically, what I took it is that he went in and changed things in his life.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things that I thought, well, that's interesting, is that his parents, or the Kents,
right,
were killed off
yes.
mainly because of what he did.
Right. And that's...
I thought that was different because it was kind of like Grant Morrison actually did something that felt... This is kind of right with the New 52, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, New 52 was changed mainly because of what Flash did.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I was surprised. That was one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
It also changed the species of dog that Crypto was, I guess.
Yeah,
That was
they,
the other thing.
Well, that was the thing.
He's not a retriever. He's some sort of werewolf.
Yeah, well, I think they said that he was like a genetically engineered Kryptonian guard dog. So it's... Huh. The universe wants me to be... Oh, you're missing it.
Ah.
For those of you playing the home game, a spider came down on a web in front of me.
And it bit him, and now he's swinging around all over the place.
Actually, the radioactivity just made me very sick.
And now you were dying.
Dang. I did find blue kryptonite. Blue kryptonite is the Bizarro analog to green kryptonite. Using Bizarro logic, this in general hurts Bizarros while having beneficial effects on ordinary Kryptonians. Okay, I remember now. Yeah, because there was a Geoff Johns Superman story where Superman got hit with blue kryptonite and it, like, increased his powers tenfold and he gained Superman vision. And when he looked at somebody with Superman vision, they became Superman. Or they were not Superman, but they got the same powers.
Well, that makes sense.
Oh, totally.
You know what's really sad right now? What's I'm that? Holding a spider and you're the only one here to talk until I get back to get rid of the spider.
Okay.
So I'll try to talk about kryptonite.
Okay.
I love how you use Bizarro logic.
Well, I was just reading the Wikipedia entry.
I know, that was funny.
So, we'll have to excuse Adam while he goes and disposes of the horrible irradiated spider. So Morrison's Action Comics essentially boils down to, like Adam was saying, that the Vindictivix, who's like a fifth-dimensional imp, like Mixture Spitlick, the whole point is that he hates Superman, so the whole arc has been him behind the scenes doing things to mess with Superman. So you mentioned, like, he caused the Kents to be in a car accident, which caused their death. He organized the anti-Superman army. But, you know...
He also went into the 30th century?
Yeah.
And
I think
did something with the Legion. I forget what that was.
I think basically... You know, early on in the run, we had that little two-issue break in the Brainiac
story. That seemed like it was so, like, out of
place. Yeah, I remember Matt being, like, really upset that happened, and he didn't want the break. But, you know, that story, it went back and explained that, you know, what Brainiac is and how his ship works. You know, how Superman's ship that brought him to Earth, how that worked. But it also had this little flashback story. Well, not even a flashback, but it's like... While jeans and t-shirt Superman is fighting Brainiac, Superman of the present is time travel back in time to 6 years ago with the Legion of Superheroes to prevent the green kryptonite engine from being stolen by Vindictivix.
Yeah.
And they eventually get it back, but that's another thing that they changed, is that by going back and stealing that kryptonite, that piece of kryptonite that powers Superman's ship that brought him to Earth as a kid, that piece of kryptonite spawned all the other different versions of kryptonite, I believe, is what they said.
I think that's what they were saying.
So we see the genesis of where all the kryptonite comes from. We see Superman get his super suit, I guess you want to say, the Kryptonian armor or whatever. It's in the back in that volume.
Yeah,
they
printed it.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, and, that's where it starts.
So it's really interesting, though, because being Morrison, you know, Morrison's never going to tell just a straightforward story. Morrison's always got different things to say metaphorically. So the whole run, really, you know, 0 through 18 plus the annual, really is not necessarily just about Superman becoming the Superman that we know today, but also more about, you know, they established, you talked about the fifth dimensional issue where we see Mischa Spitlick and Vindictivix and how they were sort of competing magicians in the court of the fifth dimension.
Yeah.
And how Vindictivix was jealous of Mischa Spitlick because Mischa Spitlick could always make the king of the fifth dimension amused, where Vindictivix, not so much. And they explained that Mischa Spitlick's great trick is, you know, the classic version of Mischa Spitlick is that every month or every couple of months, he comes down to the third dimension just to bother Superman. It's not like he has any grand schemes of killing Superman or anything.
He's just having fun.
Yeah, he just likes to bug him, you know? And the only way Superman can get rid of him is to make him say his name backwards, and it sends him back to the fifth dimension for a while. And they sort of explain that, like, that was Mischa Spitlick's court gesture trick for the king in the fifth dimension. So Vindictivix, being jealous of Mischa Spitlick, wants to get rid of his greatest trick. So Vindictivix hates Superman.
Yeah.
And, you know, that issue was really metaphysical. He talks about he went and got the... I think he called it the million pointed spear or something, and they explained that, like, the third dimension was encased inside of Mischa Spitlick's hat.
Yeah,
and so when he hits the hat with the million pointed spear, he hits the third dimension all at once in the fifth dimension, but in the third dimension it appears that he's hitting it at different times. So that is where, that's super, like Superman says in issue 18, to me, you've been attacking me my whole life, but you experience time differently, so to you, you've been attacking me once.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of Superman's idea of how he can beat him.
Yeah.
I
loved how he did it. I loved at the end how he's...
And that was the other thing, too, is, you know, you were saying to me last night, you know, read Action, because we're going to talk about Action.
Yeah.
And as I was reading Action 18, Morrison really does bring it all to bear here. You know, he really does bring it all together and ties up everything. And
Morrison writes for trade, in a way.
You know, he kind of does.
He really does, because it's not necessarily that he does it on purpose. It's just, it's how he writes, and it reads better all at once.
Yeah. Well, I would say,
because he has so much that he's trying to do in a limited amount of issues.
Right.
That, I mean, except for Batman, he's been doing that Batman story for how long now?
6 years.
Yeah, and it's the same story since Batman Inc.
Yeah.
New 52 set him off course, and that's why they had to bring out new Batman Inc.
If you take my opinion, I'd say that it's the other way around. It's not... Well, okay, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, they messed up Grant Morrison.
Oh, no, yeah. It wasn't Grant Morrison didn't do anything. He was still writing his story, and it was actually good, but everything else in DC wasn't as good at the time.
I like to just pretend that Batman Inc. still takes place in the pre-universe. It's just everybody got new costumes.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah. But, you know, like in Action 18, like, this is where everything starts to come together. So Susie, who is Lois's niece, she mentions that Superman used her idea to defeat Vindictivix. So I had to go back and look.
I want to do the same thing.
But I
remember when she comes in.
Yeah, it's issue like 11 or 12. She says, well, what if everybody said their name backwards all at the same time? What would that sound like? And that's like, and Lois just says, you're being ridiculous.
You're ridiculous.
She says something to the effect of, like, you know, oh, you have such a big imagination, how cute, and then just moves on. And then she
looks at her, and she's like, I hate you. I hate you, Lois Lane. Then she becomes vindictive.
That's going to be what happens next.
That's it. Yeah. She's the bad guy.
But
she hates Lois Lane. She'll destroy her.
Right, exactly.
And but she will, probably.
I really do need to, you know, with my other reading stack and this giant Ecstatics omnibus.
Sort of read that, too.
Someday, I promise, I will sit down and reread all of Action 0 through 18 in the annual all at once.
Well, the two main things I'd like to sit back and reread is this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to read Batman, Court of Owls, Night of Owls.
Right.
The Court of Owls and Night of Owls. Mm-hmm. So those are two I really kind of want to. I got to wait on this one because we haven't got a second one. I don't know. Has this been a preview, the second one yet?
Yes. It comes out in May.
It comes out in May?
Morrison's second Superman hardcover in May.
But there's going to be three, probably.
Yeah, there's going to be three.
Yeah.
I think the third one. Because the second one's only going to have 0 through 12 and the annual.
So I got a little wait because I want to read them all at once. I'm not going to read them.
Unless they do four, but the third volume would have to be 13 through 18. So how many is 13? So that's six issues. So they'll probably do three then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say for anybody who started on Morrison's Action and dropped off somewhere, maybe reread it in trade.
Yeah.
Maybe reread it all at once.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
Even I read Final Crisis all at once, and it was
that definitely.
It's still difficult, but it makes a little more sense.
What's this? You're breeding spiders? What did I hear?
There's a spider coming from the ceiling.
There was a tiny spider that came down from the ceiling.
Did it bite you?
It bit him.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I've been sitting here thwipping all day.
It was crazy because I got the spider in one of these tissues, and I was just sitting here holding it, and I was like, okay, now what? Because
he was like, I got to get up, Ryan, talk about it.
And then he was sitting there talking to himself. People were watching him, and I was like, ha.
Oh,
and he was like, I'm now vindictive.
I haven't done a podcast by myself because it does feel a little weird. I mean, in a while. I used to sit on the sofa reading through the previews, talking it out. But now, I have to wait for the wife to go to bed. So now it's midnight and I'm sitting there talking to myself.
In an empty house.
Yeah.
Quiet house.
Yeah.
Creeper.
Dog looks at me like, what are you doing?
Dog's like, what? He's like human.
Jesse asked me when you're bringing the dog back to the
comic. I guess.
Not playing. She's still too excitable.
Aw.
Poor thing.
That's what I told Jess. I was like, you'll meet her sometime.
Oh, yeah.
One day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't even say free comic book day because my family's not going to be here.
Well, I'll be here this year. I want to make sure I get here this year.
No, because I got to say, Katie has softball or something. Oh. There's something going on.
Well, that's important, though.
Yeah.
Good. So it's just you, free comic book
just
day?
Just me.
I can help you out.
Okay, you come help out.
I helped out last year.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, you did. And we went out to lunch.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I try to be nice to people.
Yeah, but I had to pay. No. What's going on here? No, I'm kidding.
You.
That was not what happened.
So Adam said you didn't read Action 18 yet?
No, okay. No. I stopped after...
We talked about it at the best time, though.
You did, yes, because I did not read that. Good. I mean, I looked at it and I kind of flipped through it and I kind of went, okay, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I might wait and reread
do
it
Do I wait
and...
I'll wait till they come out with one big trade.
That's what I was thinking. This would make a really nice omnibus, and sometimes...
It might even look just a little omnibus, actually.
Yeah. Because it's only 20 issues.
Well, I know something...
We got trouble.
Well, you'll be back.
Trouble with
a
mini-me.
But one thing we can both talk about, Colin can talk about it when he gets back.
Yeah, when we move on to.
If anybody doesn't know yet, Robin, Damian died.
Sad face.
Sad. Everybody's sad.
I mean that seriously. That's a serious sad face, not a sarcastic. I was really... I did not want him to go.
Yeah.
I love Damien. I've loved Damien ever since he was a little jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still a little jerk.
I remember when he cut off some guy's head.
That was awesome.
Yeah. It's in his scrapbook, I'm sure.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The whole head.
That was whenever he met up with Tim Drake. That was Tim Drake's favorite thing to bring up.
Yeah.
It's like when you have an argument with somebody, they only bring up that one thing you did that one time. And that was what Tim Drake would do. Tim Drake would be like, hey, remember that time you cut off that villain's head?
The guy's head. And then you threw it at me and I had a grenade in it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
So do you just want to talk about Batman Inc., or do you want to talk about all of it?
Well,
or?
I don't know, because Batman Inc.'s not over yet. Maybe we'll talk about Batman Inc. fully.
Batman and Robin 18 was...
Yeah, the issue itself,
that was
Batman and Robin, I think that was the better of the bunch, even though a lot of people will read it and they'll be like, this had no words in it. But, in comic books, it's not just about the writing, it's just about the word bubbles. They tell the artist, what they want stuff to look like, and the artist imagines it makes it look pretty, basically.
And that's, I do enjoy a comic book that can tell you a story visually.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of, half of a comic book is the art. So this was really great. Silent issue of Batman and Robin.
Yeah. I think it was a really what they were going for. Yeah. You know, with the, you know, this is in memory of him.
Right.
It showed, like, you know, the pain that Bruce was going through. Also, what Alfred was, you know.
Even though he was only there for that one scene, which, that painting that they showed of, it's Bruce, Alfred, Dick, Tim, Jason, or no, not Jason, I'm sorry.
Jason wasn't invited to that painting.
It's because he mentions that in issue 11 or 12 or something.
It's like, yeah, I must have missed that.
So Dick, Damien, Tim, Bruce, and Alfred. And the painting was never finished. And the one person who's not finished in the painting is Damien.
Yeah.
So we get that nice scene of Alfred goes in and uncovers it and looks at it, and Bruce comes in and covers it back up and takes it away.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we get some really awesome double-page spreads of Batman. And I love Patrick Gleason. I first saw Patrick Gleason's art in Green Lantern Corps after he jumped on after Sinestro Corps War.
Yeah.
And if you have not read those issues of Green Lantern Corps, go back and read those because they're excellent. Those are also written by Peter Tomasi, but this whole Patrick Gleason drawing Batman thing should never end, ever. Because, you know, we get
one of my favorite things that he does is he makes the eyes really intense by reversing the white with the black.
Yeah.
And I don't know, something about that. I'm like, that's neat.
Yeah, I really like it. And this was a silent issue that was really well told, just in the art.
Batman, Robin 18.
The thing I liked about it was it showed you just what comic books can do.
Yes.
Because it wouldn't have been as good in prose.
No.
It wouldn't have been as good like on film.
Right.
You couldn't have done as much. I'm thinking specifically of the one page where he's going after the bad guys, and in the scallops in his cape was each of their faces showing terror.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you may have been able to have done that in film, but not as much as that just conveyed very simply, two pages, you got it, Batman's gone crazy. He's taking it out on the bad guys.
Yeah. That's one image all at once. They would have that would have been at least 30 seconds of screen time.
But it just shows how, you know, not simply, but how powerful.
And that was that was the one, I don't want to get confused with Batman, but I don't think it was Batman. That was the one when they have the light on.
Yeah.
Gordon and Bullock. All the bad guys are just lined up on the roof.
I did love that. You know, Gordon and Bullock see out the window, the bat signal comes on, and they run up to the roof. Yeah, and like, there's just a pile.
It's the opposite of what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, just tied up, knocked out, and I kind of like that.
Now, was it in Batman where they had the light on and he didn't come and they're just kind of like, he's not coming?
I think so, yeah. I don't know. I'm glad Tomasi and Gleason are not leaving Batman and Robin. I'm glad that the title's not getting canceled now that Robin's not here, because honestly, it is my favorite Batman title behind Batman Incorporated.
I think they'll figure something out with it. It is interesting that they're not. Because in a way, that book was the Damian book.
Yeah,
it was. And it's,
you know, and for all the people, a pretty easy way to bring Damien back. So
I think that's
and to change it pretty much. And like somebody, I was on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was very funny because it was a tweet conversation between one of my customers and Dejan Kovacevic, who's a sports writer for the used to be the Post Gazette, now the Tribune Review.
Cool.
And they were talking about you know, why that happened, why they're screwing it up. And I just basically said, I think it was a Morrison thing, and no one there is willing to say no to him.
Yeah.
He wanted to kill Damien. Does it make sense? Absolutely not. He's a great character. It's, and they have, when was the last time they introduced a great character?
Yeah.
It's been a while. So to kill him off like that, but I think it was completely your buddy's decision.
Yeah. You know, and he said that too. I was reading a lot of interviews afterwards of, you know, of course, anytime something big happens in a Morrison book, they're going to go ask him, and his answer is always, well, that's what I've been planning. And that's what he said about Damien. He said that he was actually going to kill Damien at the end of the first arc that he was in, the whole Batman and Son arc way back in 2006.
Which he could have, because in a way, he's just, like, what, kind of a clone in a way.
Well, because the way that story ended, that was Talia and Bruce and Damien on the top of the submarine, and Talia says, this is your choice, Bruce. You can come with me and Damien, and we can be a family, and we can take over the world like my father wanted, or it's war. And he was like, no. And Damien says, why can't we just get along? And then the sub explodes, and Bruce doesn't know what to think of them yet. They don't come back until Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul, which was, I think, the following year. I mean, I understand why he killed him. I get what he's getting at. I agree. I wish he wasn't dead. I was really upset that he died, even though I kind of knew it was coming. I mean, they foreshadowed it in the first issue of this Batman Inc., you know. I guess, but like you said, there's Lazarus Pits. I mean, a friend of mine
Well, yeah, they did. You know, the entire thing has been the death of Robin.
The death of Robin. And a friend of mine was like, well, he got shot in the back 6 times once, and they gave him a new spine.
Yeah.
So this time he got shot like 30 more times, and he got stabbed.
No, he got run through with a sword.
Yeah, he got run through.
And,
well, yeah, he did get shot quite a few times there, too.
He got bow and arrowed, and then shot, and then stabbed. So I guess maybe
Rasputin?
Yes, he is. And he's still going to come back, and then he's going to summon Hellboy.
Well, I, you know what? I'm not looking at it like everybody else is, that they're saying, oh, you know, he's, you know, I know he's a cool character and all, but I know Grant Morrison from the beginning had a plan with this character, and then a lot of, you know, New 52 came along, and a whole bunch of other things, and the character became popular, and DC wanted to do something more with him.
Right.
Which I think they still can, but at least let Grant Morrison do a story that he's wanting to tell, because I have a feeling he knows what he's doing with what he wanted to do with it. And then you can bring him back however you want later, but
and at the very least, I'm glad that they're letting him tell the story. You know, that was the thing that I was afraid of with the reboot of, you know, he's been telling this story for 5 years already when they decided to do the New 52. Yeah. And, you know, they had closed up that volume of Batman Incorporated with the Leviathan Strikes one shot.
Yeah.
And then they said, we're going to take a break. And then the book was going to come back. And, you know, there have been changes. You know, the costumes have changed. Some of the relationships have changed. Like, the first volume of Batman Inc. has Oracle being, like, the global communication system for Batman Inc. But she can't do that anymore because, as far as we know, Barbara Gordon
Did you notice
never
that,
Oracle.
Though? Did you notice that from New 52 Batman Inc.?
What?
How often do you hear from Oracle?
You know, ever.
Yeah. Or do you see Batgirl at all?
You never see Batgirl.
They just
kind of
took her out because I think she had such a... it just wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't.
Yeah. And then another death in Batman Inc. that no one would be excited. Well, not excited, but
Batcow made it, and
if
that's
the
new Robin.
Burgers, I'm going to be sad. But they killed the Knight, Knight and Squire.
Yeah.
And I really liked Knight, so I'm wondering.
Did they
kill
Squire?
No, she's still alive. But that was
oh,
a
you're saying
hangup.
Of Knight and Squire?
Yeah,
oh,
of
okay.
Knight and Squire. Yeah. So Knight had his neck snapped by the
clone.
The clone of Damian. This big hulking thing.
Yeah.
What if they unveil it? It's really just little Damien inside, like a robot. Body.
A big
Wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah, that would be odd. And all he would say is just,
gotcha.
Yeah, and but yeah, you know, Beryl is really upset, obviously, because Cyril was kind of like her dad.
Yeah,
kind of.
And the original Squire.
Yeah, he was. He was the original Squire. So that's I'm wondering, will Morrison show that she becomes the Knight now? Are we going to have like a Lady Knight, which would be
a
awesome.
Lady Knight. What do they call a lady
in Game of Thrones?
A lady.
I've never watched Game of Thrones. I know.
Have you read the books?
No.
I haven't finished.
It's one of those pop culture
You're
things.
Revoking
that,
this.
No, not my extended.
It's like that has something to do with, like, you cannot have this extended
things.
Book.
I just never got into it. But there are lady knights, from what I'm to understand, in Game of Thrones.
There's one.
Oh, there's one. Okay. So there is a lady
knight.
So
she could beat all the men.
Oh, okay.
Good. That happens.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a special name, though.
Okay.
It's Lady Knight.
But yeah, I think
missed the spot right there.
you're gonna hassle him on how he's coloring his bags now?
What?
There's a spot on the edge of the B.
It's a B.
It's white. I can see it from here. There we go. You fixed it.
I do like that in Batman and Robin, though, the next...
I'm coloring bags while we're sitting
here. Oh, that's... I that
Adam's critiquing my coloring ability, which is nice.
Yep.
Don't see him offering to help, but...
Oh. I could have. You didn't give me...
The next couple issues of Batman and Robin are going to be like Batman and Batgirl, Batman and Nightwing,
right.
Batman and Red Hood. And I think the solicitation text for Batman and Batgirl was like, how far would you go to get someone back that you've lost? So I think they might sort of explore the Lazarus Pit thing with that.
Yeah.
They've
been playing with that. Well, you know, a lot with Batman, especially since Grant Morrison with the Lazarus Pit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Damian, or, I'm sorry, Jason Todd, that's how he was brought back.
Yeah, that was the revised origin for Jason Todd. Bruce also...
I've never read that, The Lost Days. Did you read that?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Huh.
It's a nice companion to the movie.
Really?
Yeah, to the Under the Red Hood movie. And okay. it works well with the Under the Red Hood, like, the regular comic story, too, because...
Is he trained by that society that he's trained by in this new 52 version?
No, that's all Lobdell being Lobdell. Just,
I tell you, I cannot stand him.
Well, you know, I read an interview with him, and he said that he likes to write by the seat of his pants, which I know
Obviously.
Some people really do. But I feel like that's why I don't like his stories, because from issue to issue, I have Not that I don't have any idea what's going on. It just doesn't really seem like there's any rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
I really tried to stick with Red Hood and the Outlaws because I like Jason Todd as a character.
Yeah, I like it too. Yeah. I can't wait till he's off the book.
Well, James Tynion's coming on next, and he was co-writing Batman with Scott Snyder.
So there you go.
And he's another one of those friend of Scott Snyder, now you work for DC, like Kyle Higgins was.
Yeah. But it might work.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see something new. I can't stand him anymore being on anything. He's not really helping Superman.
I tried to get into his Superman.
Knowing that they had a Superman movie coming out, they left him onto their book. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
I wanted to like the Hell on Earth story.
Yeah.
But it drug out too long.
Is that the pronunciation of it?
No, I think it's just Hell.
But isn't there an apostrophe?
There is. It's H apostrophe E-L, so I just constantly want to say, like, L.
Hill.
And, yeah.
Hill.
Whatever on that. I don't know. I'm not really reading it. I tried.
Hill on Earth.
Sorry, Mr. Libdell.
Yeah.
But in any case, though, yeah, the what Adam was talking about is a prequel series about the Red Hood called Red Hood Lost Days, and it's supposed to be about Jason... just after he came back to life after being killed by the Joker, but before he became Red Hood.
Yeah.
He does have some interaction with Talia in that book. They show him going back and sort of watching Bruce in Gotham, watching Batman spying on him.
I do find it interesting, though, what Scott Lobdell is doing with how the Joker created Jason Todd as Robin. It's been like his plan.
About that. Wasn't that in the Zero issue?
They went into it a little bit when he came back.
Okay.
And I think he actually told him, and then he like burns his face off with his mask.
I did see that.
Yeah, his face got pretty. Yeah,
apparently, that is the aftermath for Red Hood after Death of the Family.
And there's a really cool ending of that because he's like, this happens. His face gets burnt because he puts on his mask, and they put something.
Yeah,
on
Joker
his mask.
Like painted acid on the inside of his mask or something.
And when he did that, now he's been at Wayne Manor, mm-hmm. and he wakes up and like he apologizes to Bruce or something.
Okay, sorry,
and then they hug, and that's how it ends.
I think
that's how it was, or maybe Bruce apologized to him. I don't know. Don't remember.
This is mildly Red Hood related, but. For them making such a big deal of the ending of Death of the Family being that the Bat family doesn't really trust Bruce, so they're not going to work together as a team.
Yeah.
Everyone sure is working together with Bruce as a team all of a sudden again and apologizing to Bruce and saying, like, hey, I'm sorry for being a jerk.
Nightwing summed that up pretty well, that he needs to be more... How did they say it? I think he needed to be more... Nightwing needed to be more trusting of why people do certain things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the whole problem. I should
say.
Did
they ever really say if Bruce, like, does the Joker know? I guess he knew who they were.
Okay. I'm making, like, the most frustrated face right now about Death in the Family, or Death of the Family, in that the conflict of that story is just Bruce is a pompous know-it-all who believes that everyone is safe just because he says they are. And that's the conflict. And that's fine. It's just that I guess in my mind, Batman's not a jerk. Batman's overprotective and paranoid.
Yeah.
But Batman's not a jerk either. And I guess I feel like that, you know, like you were saying, at the end of that story, Alfred says, well, how did you know that he didn't already know everybody's identity? And he's like, oh, well, here's the horrible, chilling secret that I didn't tell everybody, is that after he left that card in the Batcave, I went to Arkham Asylum with the card, but not as Batman. I went as Bruce Wayne, and I showed Joker that I had the card, clearly indicating that I'm also Batman. And Joker wouldn't talk to me. So obviously I'm going to assume that means that Joker only sees me as Batman.
Yeah.
And while I agree with that I think Joker really only does care about Batman as Batman, he thinks that Bruce Wayne's the mask.
Yeah. He sure didn't know who everybody was, though.
That's the problem with the story right there. Bruce sacrificed everybody's identity. And, you know, whether or not Joker sees Bruce Wayne as Batman or Bruce Wayne is irrelevant to the point that, yes, he kind of just did reveal himself and everybody to the Joker. And it's not about... To me, the problem was that it's not about whether or not Joker sees Batman as Batman or Bruce. It's about... He just spilled the beans to Joker. You know, even if Joker doesn't care that Bruce Wayne is Batman, he knows that they are the same person now, and therefore he knows who everybody else is.
He just expects that he didn't turn around, thus he doesn't know.
Apparently.
I think we've learned that Joker, though, has been more, you know...
I just want to be like...
It's smarter than sometimes we think.
In all of... This is a guy that can, like, rig a building to explode confetti in the shape of his face.
Yeah.
Or like, somehow...
He knows what he's doing.
Somehow, every other year, finds a new helicopter that happens to have, like, the Joker... It's a helicopter that looks like the Joker's face with rotor blades on it. This man is not dumb.
No!
Like, as absurd as that stuff is, I mean, he's never been portrayed as an idiot in the comic books. I mean...
He's surprisingly smart.
Honestly, I think suing to have copyright on fish that look like him is kind of an ingenious idea. but in any case, yeah, I just feel like... I just feel like Death of the Family is just another story about... The real problem isn't that the Joker's on the loose and attacking everyone. The problem is that Bruce is completely untrustworthy and a jerk. But I just feel like that characterization is so different than other depictions of Batman. And this, I guess this goes back to the New 52 thing. This is not... This New 52 Batman is not the old Batman. It's also not the way Grant Morrison writes Batman. And every writer has their own take on Batman.
Yeah.
It's just that that particular take on Batman, the Scott Snyder take on Batman, I'm okay with most of it. It just seems that the conflict of... Well, I guess he's really only told two stories of Bruce, The Court of Owls and Death of the Family. The conflict in both of those stories is that Bruce is too arrogant to realize when he's wrong.
Yeah.
And... I guess that's not really my kind of Batman.
Well,
I'm not saying that the story wasn't well written.
No, no, it was definitely. There are some. Yeah, I've noticed some too. I saw a lot of some things that seemed very unoriginal. The idea of Bruce, them not trusting Bruce, and Bruce doing something that makes them not trust him is so unoriginal, though.
I mean, we got that in War Games.
Yeah.
We got that in Nightfall, kind of.
Yeah.
Just to the point where he was like, hey, Azrael's going to be Batman now. And Tim Drake was like, are you stupid? I think we might have gotten into No Man's Land a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. But yeah. I think there were more reasons. I think that made a little more sense, though, why. Because, I mean, he kind of lost his city.
But I guess it gets to, you know, like I was saying, this is a different Batman. This isn't the same Batman. Even if DC insists that, you know, year one is this Batman's origin, and he's still, you know, XYZ to continuity that way,
yeah,
the character is being written as a different character.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I've seen a lot. I think Scott Snyder's... That story reached the Court of Owl level, because I thought Court of Owl was very original. It was a new idea.
It was.
But this I didn't think was that original. I think it was creative, though. Mm-hmm. But it was fun.
Yeah, but I do agree with you from what I overheard. Sorry. No, bringing up customers, you know.
He's back.
Yeah, the whole Death of the Family was kind of mooted by Batman Inc.
Yeah.
Well, so, because that's why I was telling people, you know, when they were, I don't want to say complaining, but saying, hey, nobody died. And I said, well, the family. It was Death of the Family. Right. They don't trust him and things. And...
Then somebody died.
Now, you know, everybody's trying to comfort him because of the death of Damian.
I liked the premise of them saying that Batman's going to be by himself now. I'm fine with that.
He will. You know, maybe this even actually drives him further away from them.
And what a perfect timing though for that. Though, if you think about it, death of the family was the death of Jason Todd.
Right. Death in the family, or
death
of the family becomes the death of Damian, or leads to
the death of
leads
Damian.
Up to, I should say.
Some of the issues have been really confusing, especially if you read like Red Hood, and they show that they showed the scene in it where he's what's his name, the bat with the visor, the Cyclops
Batwing.
No, that's
Wingman,
and he. Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd, because I was just like, wow, I wasn't expecting that to be in this book. But
I think the problem with Batman Inc.
It's not even the same type of Jason Todd in Batman Inc. as there is in this.
The problem with Batman Inc. is that Morrison is, and I think he has every right to, is telling his story as if Flashpoint never happened, yeah. And that's fine.
But then again, he kind of screwed up, if you think about it.
How do you say that?
Well, he screwed up. He screwed up Jason Todd, because the way he was writing Jason Todd and Batman and Robin is completely different than this new Jason Todd. In fact, he had this whole thing where he had red hair. Remember? Well, because Batman supposedly forced him to dye his hair, and now he's back to with black hair.
Yeah, right? And he was having skin issues.
He was having skin issues. Yeah.
He said he was having horrible acne from wearing the red hood all the time, from wearing the mask or something. But
now it's back to normal. That was all Grant Morrison.
Well, that was in the first volume of Batman Inc. There's a scene where, you know, you see Batman handing the wingman costume to someone, but they're in shadow, you don't see. But he says, "This is your chance to recover a reputation. This is your chance to save a reputation." So, and we couldn't see who it was, so we didn't know if it was someone who'd been disgraced, if it was someone trying to say, "Okay, well, you can make Wingman a good character or a good hero again."
Yeah.
But you're right. I didn't think about that. Yeah, he does kind of go from being
he changed his whole character.
Yeah, we should kill everybody.
He was just like, "Yeah, I didn't like that idea.
Yeah, I'll help Bruce."
We'll blame New 52 on that.
Especially when in Red Hood, he erased the happy memory he had.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just two different Jason Todds. I thought it was, and I especially thought it was weird seeing him in this Red Hood. Yeah. The Outlaw is just like the Batman Inc. character.
That is kind of a problem with.
I'm just thinking in November or October, whenever they hit the 2-year mark. Maybe they'll go, "You know what? We're gonna try this again."
I'll do another
reboot. Yeah, let's reboot. Yeah, and
I mentioned Valiant earlier.
Dan DiDio is gone, and all these people are gone, and we're gonna try again.
I mentioned Valiant earlier, and I was thinking about how I don't know. I mean, I don't know how Valiant's been doing here at the store for you, but I like most of Valiant stuff that I've read.
It's very hard to tell because I have a guy who wants every cover,
right?
So if there's a 1 in 50, I have to order 50. Okay. So I'm ordering a boatload. I really don't know how. I can't say, "Well, gosh, I had to reorder this. I sold out," because I'm not selling out of any of them.
I guess
so. It's very hard for me to tell how it's doing.
Right. The thing I liked the most about Valiant, I think, was that was a ground up reboot. It wasn't just here's all this old stuff that you can go back and reread that still matters, but you don't have to. Like,
and they're Marvel still now. Reprinting those in hardcovers.
Yeah. It's not like Marvel now, where like all that stuff still happened, but you don't have to read it. Or it's not like New 52, where all this stuff still sort of maybe kind of happened, you should probably read it, but it's not going to matter because nothing makes sense anyway. Valiant was pretty much just issue one, go. This is the first issue, this is the first story, this is the first everything.
And I think that's why people have enjoyed it, because it's been a long time since we've had
something like that. Yeah. And I was thinking about how much I would have enjoyed...
Anybody in that car? Just the lights are on.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about how much I would have enjoyed, as much as I love what Gleason and Tomasi have done on Batman and Robin, it would have been really cool to have Batman and Robin number one, and this is like the first night that Robin's been out, the very first Robin, whether it's Dick Grayson or we just go ahead and say that Damian was the first Robin. Do something new. I think they worry a little too much about catering to...
Yeah.
You know, they didn't want to make the old fans mad, but they wanted to have a gateway for new fans, and
had Batman been with Robin before then? I mean, it may have. I don't remember.
In this new continuity?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's already had four Robins.
No, but has he been with Damian? I'm sorry, Damian Robin.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, because obviously that would have been an interesting... Because I thought that was pretty much...
But that's the problem now, is that Damian is supposed... Supposedly, Batman's had four Robins in 5 years. Because they established that Batman was not...
Batman six years ago. But see, it was funny. I was talking with somebody about this earlier, about in All New X-Men. Mm-hmm. Rich Johnson had an interesting thing where it shows, you know, they went back in time, got the young X-Men, brought them to the present, and brought them, and they were in Times Square. And they're looking around going, "Oh my gosh, Times Square, it's all this advertising. What's going on?"
Yeah.
And Rich Johnson posted, "Well, here's how it looked 10 years ago." And he even posted how it looked in 1983, which had been 30 years ago. It still had all the neon advertising. Right. So he's kind of going... does this mean Cyclops is now 70? You know,
right, exactly.
I looked at it as kind of, people are nitpicking, how did you have four Robins in 5 years? Yeah. Well, how are you taking X-Men from the 60s, bringing them ahead 50 years, and yet the new guy's only, 5 years older than him or 10 years older? You know, it just,
I think
you can't do it when you had something going on. It's like a soap opera.
It is.
You know, they have a baby. 2 years later, that baby's dating.
Right.
You know, so...
Yeah, they it's the sliding timeline. And I think
and all of a sudden, then your ex-husband is now sleeping with your daughter. Yeah. You know, it just... none of it makes sense. And I think what... I still go back to what they wanted to do is they wanted to de-age their characters.
Yeah.
You didn't want to have Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman all in their 30s. They wanted to get them, try to, you know, mid-20s, you know, just to try to, as I say, euthanize them. so.
That's just sick.
But it just, in some things, it doesn't work. But when you say, oh, hey, he's had four Robins over the course of 70 years, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's sort of the trade-off. You know, with Marvel, you do have that sliding timescale problem. With DC, you have the problem of how do you fit all of that into one space. I don't think there's ever going to be a happy medium because it's comics, really. When it gets down to it, just they are right when they say don't worry about it, just read the story. Because that's the writer that's writing the story is not trying to worry about that continuity. They're trying to tell you a story.
Yeah.
So as much as I nitpick and as much as it bugs me, it does not hinder my enjoyment. As you lean up to look at the list, what else do we want to talk about?
Well, we're coming up on a time.
Are we?
Right. Who cares? Who cares? We haven't done one of these in, what, 8 months, and you're going to be, ooh, we're 5 minutes over.
We're 10
minutes. What's on your list? Who cares? Black Beetle, haven't read it. Astro City. I have hopes for Astro City, but it never sold well when it was coming out. You know, like, I mean, when I say sold well, like 2 issues.
Ah.
So... lack of.
I know it's had big delays and things, but I like the trades that I've picked up of it.
66 Batman, that's interesting.
Yeah. So.
I like the toys. I don't know about a book, but I do like that Allred's doing covers, so I.
Right. So I guess CBS has had the rights because of the show.
Oh, Adam's texting somebody. They're going over.
Oh, no.
They're not listening to me.
I'm checking something.
Someone's going to break down the door. I guess.
This podcast ends now!
It's a bam! I guess that's the problem is that CBS has always owned the rights because the show was originally on CBS.
Okay.
The 1966 Batman show. So that's why it hasn't come out on DVD yet. We haven't seen merchandise or anything because...
why? That's stupid.
I know. They could make so much money.
Exactly.
But it seems like they're getting there soon because, you know, now we've got...
I know the toys had already been announced.
Yeah. And now they've announced a new digital first series, which DC's really getting into these digital series. Yeah. And I love that they're reprinting them as books.
Except for Adventures of Superman, but we won't get into that.
And so they're going to do a digital first Batman series that takes place in the timeline of the 1966 Batman show, Adam West, Burt Ward, and it's being written by Jeff Parker.
Right. Which is that his first DC work?
I think it might be.
Because I know he's been a Marvel guy.
Right, because they recently just snagged Greg Pak for Batman Superman.
Right, right. Has he quit yet? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it wouldn't be surprising at all. No, I'm kind of excited to see how that 66 Batman book... I think that's what it's just going to be called. I think it's just being called 66 Batman.
Or Batman 66, yeah. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
66 Batman would be fun to rack.
66 Batman. I think it could be really fun. If they play it... I mean, obviously, it's not going to be serious. I expect at least two Batusi dances.
It's with Allred.
Right, exactly. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Speaking of which, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Allred drew the Batusi in his solo book, and they're coming out with a big hardcover of all those solo. I'm very excited about that.
Cause I never read those. Were they good?
They were, and I had sold mine, because I think they came out right around when I opened, and at that point I was selling everything.
Right.
So I'm excited about that. Okay, so we're done now. You happy?
No.
I did have another cool thing that I was going to
talk
about.
Oh, okay.
About. Okay, so...
why are you rushing us?
So I don't know if you guys have heard about it. I heard about it from online. A couple of the news websites reported it. And then... John Suntress, Word Balloon Podcast, did a really cool interview with the woman who's running it.
Also includes the Dead Girl mini.
That's cool. Make sure. Cool. Awesome, yeah. And this woman that teaches at Ball State University, she's a professor there. I forget her name at this time. Sorry.
That's from Indiana. That's where Jeremy grew.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we don't talk about Jeremy since he blew us off.
How am I supposed to talk about Baxter paper if you're not here?
I know.
Jeez.
Jerk.
So
we'll talk about Mando paper. Okay. paper.
She taught a course at Ball State University on gender in comic books. So exploring how gender roles are used in comic books. depictions of males versus females, things like that. So they wanted her to teach it as a, they call it a MOOC, a massively online, I forget what the second O is for, course. Basically, it's just a free college course, basically, that anyone can enroll in and take. So I decided to sign up for it. It starts April 2nd, and it sounds really interesting. We just got the book list yesterday. And so every week we're reading some articles about gender theory and sociology, things like that. But then we're also reading, as Colin signals that he is born.
No, but it, that just doesn't, you know, yeah. Gender theory, I'm sorry. It's just, no, it's not fine. Something it's, I'm super interested in.
When I was studying English for my bachelor's, we talked a lot about gender theory.
That explains and a lot. And,
yeah, it's basically, it's an easy way for me to keep writing about comics as if I was still in college. So, but we're also reading comic books, and then every week there's going to be a live interview, which unfortunately I can't participate in. They're doing some really cool live interviews with Mark Waid, Sana Aminat. I think she's an editor for Marvel Comics. She's going to speak. They're speaking with, I think she might be speaking to Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Okay.
And I know Scott Snyder has at least recorded an interview, but it's just sort of exploring how men and women are depicted differently in comic books. So we're reading Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise, Wade's Superman Birthright, along with some older Silver Age Superman stories.
With Lois Lane.
So yeah, I know, like, Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, because that's all she is. I don't know, I was really excited about it. I didn't know if anybody else had heard about it, but yeah, that starts soon, so I'll be reporting on that, I guess, as that goes on, but... Okay, now we can end the podcast.
Okay.
Now that we ended it with a whimper in my boring college course.
He's so down on himself.
Oh.
Well, that's it.
I thought it was
good. That's it.
That's it. Unless you have anything else to say.
I mean, there's not really much to say about
we
Superior
talked about
Spider-Man.
So much when you were at the cash register.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And
I'm sorry.
You came back.
I'm running a
and
business.
Just like,
I apologize. I won't do it anymore.
I started bad because I feel like every time I'm at a podcast, I only talk about DC, but everyone should be reading Mark Waid's Daredevil, and everyone should be reading Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. Those are two good ones.
No.
Colin doesn't like Superior Spider-Man. Makes him cry.
No. Doesn't make me cry.
Does it make you feel inferior?
Not as
kidding.
No, I'm conflicted on it. I just don't know where it's going. So.
Is there going to be an inferior Spider-Man book? That would be funny.
When they go back. Peter Parker, the inferior Spider-Man.
Kirkman wrote,
The Mediocre Spider-Man?
Irredeemable Ant-Man.
Truth.
Yeah.
Mark Waid wrote a book called Irredeemable.
What happened to that character?
What, Irredeemable Ant-Man?
What happened to him after?
He got killed at the end of Secret Avengers.
I thought Irredeemable Ant-Man was Scott Lang.
No,
that was the guys who found
the... Eric O'Grady.
Yeah, they found the costume and stole it.
Oh, okay.
Kirkman.
Like two S.H.I.E.L.D. agents or something like that.
Yeah.
FF.
And then they add him into Secret Avengers. He was also... Was he in Dark Avengers?
I don't think so.
Like the new Dark Avengers.
The black something. The black... I didn't finish Manta. After it got totally botched by what was the event?
Thunder?
What was the not AVX. Well, was it maybe AVX? But Secret Avengers just totally went off the rails.
Fear itself. AVX that like most of Secret Avengers took place on the moon and just them hanging out, being like, "Well, we got
to
do something."
Yeah, I never went back to it to finish that storyline. Yeah.
No, they weren't. They weren't in the moon. They were in a. Kind of, it was this very small satellite.
It was the Kree thing.
Okay.
No, it was the Kree.
What?
Hey, what's up?
Did they have two? Because they had like something that a Pym created base.
I didn't write AVX.
They had one base that was like a Pym created base that was like the small satellite where they could be really small.
Okay, but they could still be in space.
And be in space, yeah. But it took up less space. He just, you know, because Pym makes all that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pep's such an exciting character.
Oh yeah. All right, well, I guess.
But
well,
that's our podcast.
All right.
Tune in. What are we gonna do? These every 2 weeks.
We're gonna do it every couple of weeks.
Every couple weeks. So.
It's good to be back.
You'll and whenever whenever Colin gets it up on the online.
Apparently that's all I do now.
Now you have to get it online. I get it ready. You just gotta put it up there.
Colin's still gonna be bitter at me for missing out for so long, but I'm back now.
Yeah, but they already forgot who you are. All right, everyone. Take care.
Bye.